Hello and welcome to another episode of Banking on Information. Today, my guest is John Mitchell, CEO and co-founder of Episode 6. John, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Rutger. Glad to be here.
Now, we always start with that very important question that I ask everyone, and so I'll ask it to you as well, John. Why, John, do you do what you do?
You know, myself and two other co-founders are completely aligned in building this company and what drives us. And a lot of it comes from our experience in the payment space, where we saw during a decade and a half the challenges that arise from wanting to build new products and services on technology that's really dated, hard to change, hard to adapt, written in languages that frankly is just not available or taught anymore. And so I am driven by the challenge of building out these new financial payment systems in ways that are more usable, easier to access, and that can just provide a platform that allows for innovation.
So you saw the limitations of legacy systems and you wanted to change that and say, hey, what if we start over with modern tech? How can we do better? How can we make payments better, easier, faster? Is that right?
That's right. Better, easier, faster. And for all payment products and services, there is infrastructure. And in most cases, this infrastructure is 30 or 40 years old, believe it or not. And so you can layer on top of that, but really things are only as powerful as their weakest link. And over time, everything calcifies. And over time, it's just extremely challenging to make changes on systems that were designed usually for branch banking, certainly not for mobile banking.
Well, based on that, so you're passionate about that, doing that better with new tech. What is the number one use case that you solve for at Episode 6?
We solve for the challenge around being able to program money. So programmable money is the big idea. Interoperability between programmable money schemes is a big idea, and we're solving for both of those. And so our system is essentially spread out across its 16 cloud regions across the globe, so that we can offer up via API this new technology that's available anywhere, and through configuration, not customization, through configuration can be adapted into local regulatory landscapes and local business requirements.
And so what does that look like for your customers in a practical manner? What outcome does that deliver?
In a practical manner, our customers have access to technology that's more efficient. It's much more powerful. It's resilient, which our enterprise class customers need. It's bank grade technology, but it's easier to access and it's much more nimble, easier to use through, you know, hundreds of API that are, you know, just RESTful API that anybody can access a code against. There's just an enormous amount of power sitting there that allows for almost anything that one could imagine within credit, debit, and prepaid.
So that's what you facilitate, credit, debit, prepaid.
Credit, debit, prepaid, digital ledgering and subledgering that usually revolves around current accounts, lending, and credit ledger.
So everything needed to make the actual payments go from A to B seamlessly.
The foundation for the seamless movement of funds, yes. And payments can be, especially in this day and age, everything's sort of tilting a little bit towards crypto. Our system is asset class agnostic. So whether we're talking about fiat or digital or coupon or some sort of coin, it's all available via our system.
That's great, because yes, we are seeing a change in that. Now, when you talk to your customers and your customers talk about you, how do they say they get value from what you do?
We provide mechanisms for our customers to actually build products that their customers want. And that's that's something that not every provider can say. And so we don't want to just provide access into me too products and services. Sure. Some of our customers are just putting things out there that are sort of standard in the market, and that's important. But the ability to be able to configure and maneuver and act quickly as the market changes is important. Our customers are really appreciative of that. One of our first principles as a company is that we want all of our clients to be referenceable. So we're working hard at that. You know, we're growing and we have many clients across 4 continents. And that's not always an easy task, particularly for a younger company. As we get bigger and get bigger fast, have to adapt quickly.
So in addition to standard products that are table stakes, you provide more flexibility where people can then build new products rapidly to meet the moment.
That's right. We provide much more flexibility.
That's very powerful because obviously in a B2B2C, the consumer demands change daily, I would say, especially in this dynamic world. So your customers will have to adapt their products to what the end consumers want.
They have to. And, you know, if you have a 2-year product roadmap and by the time you get a requirements done and then get a product out, the market has moved, which happens now because the rate of change is accelerating. It's not an ideal situation.
Well, that is actually a perfect bridge to something that I like to do, which is called futures thinking. You don't have a crystal ball, but we can envision what a possible future could look like. So that's what I want to do with you, John. Think 10 years out, think 2035. What does the world look like? What do payments look like? Financial services? Paint me a picture of what you think that world could look like.
I think globally, everything will be on demand. Everything will be in real time. Everything will be readily available from wherever one is at. I think the identification process will be biometric. I think it won't rely on Facebook and Google as much to log in. Yeah. Real time and borderless. I think that's what we will see in terms of payments.
Shouldn't it be as easy to move money around the world as like sending an email or sending someone a text? We're able to do that, right? We're able to send messages, but not yet payments. So that'd be interesting to see if we get there.
Real time isn't new. But I think interoperability between all of these schemes is something that's still nascent. And then just frictionless is the big idea. Whether we're going to see crypto or government-backed stable coins as the currency of choice, that's TBD, I suppose. And regulations are changing now, and so we'll see where that goes. But frictionless, on demand, anywhere, anytime, and we're not too far from that.
So if that becomes a reality, what do we need to do today to get ready for that, to be prepared for what might be out 10 years?
That's a good question. Well, we need to modernize and have systems that can adapt and change as the market changes. And, those are big, big projects. If we just look at financial institutions, we don't look at insurance or fleet or transit, we're all in the same boat. If we just look at financial institutions, there's a long haul in front of most of the banks to upgrade and modernize. And it's not easy. The idea of digging at something out is not palatable to many CIOs. And so we offer a progressive modernization strategy to get around that. I think in the 2010s, there was a big idea. And I think in the 2020s, it's not as realistic. You know, I think decade-long project that's $100 million is not as interesting to some.
But it is required to keep up with the pace of everything. So if we want to do instantaneous, seamless, and everywhere on demand, you have to upgrade to new tech.
You really do. I mean, you can mask some of it. I saw in Europe when everybody was adopting ISO 20022, some folks just use the translator and put this data into their existing databases, and that's great. I guess they fulfill the requirement, but they lose the advantage of having vast amounts of data that they can run machine learning and AI against.
And also upgrading to a more modern tech stack allows you to actually keep up with what consumers demand and actually create new products that don't take forever to build.
That's
so
right.
You can actually keep up with the market.
That's right. And where some of these AI agents are going, designing new products can be very fast, but you have to build them on something. And so that infrastructure has to be there.
So how do you think AI plays into that picture? So I loved your vision of the future. How does AI play into that and potentially agentic AI? How's that going to work with payments?
I think it's going to eliminate some of the challenges around product design. It's going to make everything faster. I think that the way things are evolving on what seems like a daily basis, somebody was just going to prompt get an answer and there's their product. Whether that product will be built out through AI, it seems like it will be. Whether that's in 10 years, I don't know. 10 years ago, everybody told me that everything would be on blockchain now. So it takes time, but it's heading in that direction.
It is very interesting to see how we overestimate what can change in 2 years, but underestimate what can change in 10, right?
That's exactly right. It's a good way to put it.
Well, maybe that's a good point to wrap this up. Thank you very much, John, for being on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
And until next time, choose to be curious.